Here we go for the study for April 21st, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1924 hours Eastern Daylight Time. That's the year of birth of my late wife, Anne, 1924. And now we're coming to 1925 hours Eastern Daylight Time. And for today's study, we forgot to do our scriptural proverb from the Bible yesterday. So let's do that first, shall we? Let's see. We have, I think we're at verse 23. Let's see where we are. Right. I think we're at 23 and 24, even though I wrote down these verses for yesterday's study. I didn't get to do them. So I hope you've seen them already, perhaps. It's possible you've seen them. But we want to do these two plus the next two, 25 and 26, all of these verses from Proverbs chapter 15. A man takes delight in the answer he gives. A word in its time is the life that he lives. The wise one is journeying upward, for no, it keeps him away from the grave down below. Jehovah will root out the haughty man's hold. The place of the widow is founded of old. The thoughts of the wicked Jehovah does hate, but pureness is causing a pleasanter state. That was Proverbs chapter 15, verses 23 through 26. Today's proverb, little children. Now, because I've been doing a lot of research now, everything's shifted. It's hard to find out where I want to be on the tabs. Okay, I've got it. I'd like to do a lot more research on the topic of the Babylonian kings, but I just haven't had time up till now. So the work that we did in the Crucible article was very brief here. And I just did an adjustment when I lowered the reign of Nebuchadnezzar the First down to a 36-year lower to the date, which is, well, to year one, his year one. When I lower his year one by 36 years from what we used in this calculation, then we arrive at, we'll see later on, about the year 2145 for the year one of Hammurabi, which is quite insanely good in our chronology, it turns out. It's incredible. It's perfect. It's so incredibly good. If he is, in fact, Amraphel of the Bible, because we believe that the date of the events of Genesis chapter 14 in our chronology is, we believe it's the best available, but we believe that date is, let me think now. Yeah, it's 2146 is what we've said in our articles, because it was in the, what is that in terms of 2146? It's exactly when Abraham was 60 years old, exactly. From the book of Jasher, we learned this, and from our, well, we don't have time to go into it all right just today. We've already gone into it before, and we'll go into it in the future, but not today, because we have other things and we have this to do today. But it's in the year 60 of Abraham when these things happen. When that particular event happens, which is, he was born in 2206 BCE, so 60 years after that is 2146, which is 5 years before the beginning of the Assyrian Empire. And it's the time of Amraphel, the Nimrod, as he's called also. But he's called Amraphel in the Bible. And this is amazing because the name Amraphel is so similar to Hammurabi. It's the PH is related to the letter B, Hammurabi, and Amraphel and I'm Your Rabbi are almost identical. So it would be a perfect timing match if we had lowered this year of Nebuchadnezzar the First, and I'm not sure where I got the year one for him. So just keep that in mind. All of these things are very approximate, but it's possible to get it to line up much better and just by using the conventional date for Nebuchadnezzar the First, which I didn't seem to use when I did this. I didn't seem to use the conventional date for Nebuchadnezzar the First, but I used the year one of another king who preceded Nebuchadnezzar the First when I did this calculation. I'm not sure, or else either that or they changed the year one of Nebuchadnezzar, which they often do it can happen every second day. They can evaluate, they can adjust and change all the conventional king's dates. If you're looking on, for example, Wikipedia, you know, they can change those dates at any time because there are different scholars with different estimates. These are very approximate. According to the son of Nebuchadnezzar the First, the total number of years between Gulkishar, the sixth ruling king within the Sealand dynasty, and Nebuchadnezzar the First is around 696 years. And if I've got the Sealand dynasty here, I think I do. Well, there's Nebuchadnezzar the First here. Right here. We see his year one here is 1121, not 1157, but we've assumed 1157 in the article, part two of the Crucible. We're in the Crucible, part two, chapter 10. And today, we're doing paragraph 9 within chapter 10 of the Crucible, which is in part 2. Okay, so we found Nebuchadnezzar the First here. He's in what's called Dynasty 4. If we go back to the previous dynasty, this is the list of Babylonian kings. We'll check that hopefully in a moment here. This is the Kassite dynasty, which includes Burnabiriash the Second, of course, whose date is only different by 11 years from the in our chronology from the one here. Ours is 11 years higher for that king. So I mean, we've gone along with a lot of these conventional dates just as our starting point to doing our actual Egyptian chronology, and the chronologies of the other kingdoms, you know, as well. For example, the Assyrians, you know, and the Babylonians, such as these. Now here, before the Kassite dynasty is the first Sealand dynasty. That's the one we're talking about, Dynasty 2 it's called. And in that dynasty, there's the king called Gulkishar. He's the sixth king of this dynasty. But you see there's a blank for the name here in one of these rows, and the reigns of these kings for the first six are not well known for all of them. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty essentially all of these things are very uncertain. So that's something to keep in mind. But Gulkishar there is the sixth king on this list, as we just mentioned. So, continuing on, according to the son of Nebuchadnezzar the First, there were 696 years between Gulkishar and Nebuchadnezzar the First. So, right. I mean, I don't think we know even whether it was year one of Gulkishar or the end of Gulkishar. I mean, I'm not sure we know everything from these ancient sources. We don't always have all the details. We have to fill in the blanks. But here's what we've done. And the purported reigns of these six Sealand kings is what we've given here from other sources as 60, 56, 36, 15, 26, and 55 years. The first six, well, that would include Gulkishar, 55 years. right? Okay. And then, so we didn't include his reign there. So we've taken it from the end of his reign, apparently. So all these things we've assumed. And then, so when we start with the beginning of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar and calculate back to the beginning of the Sealand dynasty, we get this calculation, 1157, if that's the first year of Nebuchadnezzar the first. And you can give that number any value you want, depending on what you believe is year one of Nebuchadnezzar the first. We gave it 1157, then we added 696, and then we added those other years of the Sealand kings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them. We got 2101. I've checked that calculation. It's correct. 2101 BCE for year one of the Sealand dynasty. Okay, we'll talk about it more tomorrow, because we got other things to do today. And that's a very, very complex subject to deal with, the chronology of these Babylonian kings. But we're going to explain how we arrived at the chronology that we got within this chapter, how we did these calculations for the time of Hammurabi, okay? The dating of the king Hammurabi of Babylon, a very famous king of Babylon. He was known because of the Hammurabi Code, the code or the set of laws or ethics that was established by this king, or at least preserved and recorded by him, King Hammurabi of Babylon. So he's very famous, and maybe he was, in fact, you notice his name is similar even to the name of Abraham. It's very similar. Hammurabi, the letters of Abraham and the letters of Hammurabi are very similar. That's noteworthy. And he lived very near to during the lifetime of Abraham. That's when he lived, according to our calculation that we're going to show in detail tomorrow. And we're 36 years higher in this calculation that we did today than the conventional date of Nebuchadnezzar the first. I think it's fascinating because I subtracted those 36 years just a few minutes ago, and I found that it gives us a date of Amraphel, or Hammurabi, if that's the same person, at exactly the same time as Chedorlaomer, within 1 year of that battle in Genesis, I should say, Genesis chapter 14, where the kings went to battle. Okay, so after, and Chedorlaomer was leading one of the groups of kings, and we identified him as Gudea, who was the first king of Assyria, as we identified him, and he's also called Ninus because of that. But Ninus is a name given also to Naram-Sin by some people, and he was perhaps the same person as either Hammurabi or Amraphel, or both. They all could be the same person as Naram-Sin. There are just complications, to do with the chronologies and making sure, establishing that all of these kings fit in the right position in the chronology, so there's no contradictions and things like that. And that can get very tricky when you're dealing with ages, things that are so old, chronology, history that's so ancient, times that are so ancient. And after these things, in the reign of Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, this is Ezra chapter 7, Ezra the son of Sariah, the accent on the I, Ezra the son of Sariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Hilkiah, the son of Shalom, the son of Zadok, the son of Ahitub, the son of Amariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Meraioth, the son of Zerahiah, the son of Uzzi, the son of Bucky, the son of Abishua, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the chief priest. You can count up those generations. There's something like 15 generations there. There are not enough generations if there's, 33 years per generation. But let's say there's 50 years per generation. And 15, that'd be 750 years. We added that to the time of Ezra in 458 BCE. I just said 750 years, did I? That's 700. Let's just say 700 added to 500. We get 1200, which would not be far enough back in time to get us back to 1452, the crossing of the Jordan, which is where it should get us. So there obviously are, it's no problem. It just means there are generations missing. These are not all the priests here. I mean, we can't even, if we only did 30 years per generation, which is more typical for the priests or for any other generation after the time of Moses, which is, it is the time of Aaron, the time of Moses. So after that time, generation of 30 years would be 15 generations. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 to Eleazar. Yeah. So a third of that is, say, 30 is a third of 100, to a third of that 15, which is 5 times 100 is 500 years roughly, added to 458, only takes us back to 900 or 1000 BC. It's not early enough for 1400 BC, so it's just not complete, the genealogy. The said Ezra himself went up from Babylon. So he's in Babylon because he was part of this group. Now he didn't go up at the same time as Zerubbabel and Jeshua, because they went up in the year approximately 538 BCE, or maybe even 539. But that's not, no, it's not likely 539, because Babylon was conquered by Cyrus only in October of 539. Not enough time for them to get together and travel, because they wouldn't go up in the winter. So they could have come to Jerusalem, that group of the first Israelites, to come back to Jerusalem in 538. But Ezra didn't come up until this time here, which is mentioned, which is in the reign of Artaxerxes. Okay? And that was from the first year of Artaxerxes, is 464, I believe. Is that true? Yeah. 464 is the first year of Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, in the conventional chronology, which fits very well with what we know from everything about in the Bible, and from the prophecies of how many years it would be until the Messiah came, and so on, in the prophecy of Daniel chapter 9. I mean, we're going to talk about it all. It's also, read if you want to read more about that. It's in the article Born and Raised Messiah. These details of the time, the timing of this thing, and there are other people who say year one of Artaxerxes was the year 475 instead of 464, and we talk about that in the article Born and Raised. So the said Ezra himself went up from Babylon, and he was we're saying it's about 458 BCE, and he was a skilled copyist in the law of Moses. So 458 is long after 538. It's 80 years later, if I do the math right. And this is Ezra who wrote the account in the first six chapters of this book of Ezra. He wrote that account about the time that was 80 years earlier. Now he's writing about his day, which Jehovah, the God of Israel, had given, the law that Jehovah had given, right? The law of Moses. Ezra was a skilled copyist in the law of Moses, so that the king granted him, according to the hand of Jehovah his God upon him, all his request. Consequently, some of the sons of Israel and of the priests and the Levites and the singers and the gatekeepers and the Nethinim went up to Jerusalem in the seventh year of Artaxerxes the king. So it was in the seventh year of Artaxerxes, which is 7 years after 464, which is, or 6 years after, which is 458 BCE, counting backwards in the BCE years from 464 to 458. It's then the beginning of the seventh year of Artaxerxes. At length he came to Jerusalem in the fifth month, that is, in the seventh year of the king. Fifth month from the springtime, so something like, third or fourth in our calendar, something like the 8th or 9th months in our calendar. For on the first day of the first month, he himself appointed the going up from Babylon, and on the first day of the fifth month, he came to Jerusalem. So they set out very early to prepare to go to Jerusalem. In the first month they prepared, and then on the first day of the fifth month he came to Jerusalem according to the good hand of his God upon him. For Ezra himself had prepared his heart to consult the law of Yahweh, and to do it and to teach in Israel regulation and justice. And this is a copy of the letter that King Artaxerxes gave Ezra the priest, the copyist, a copyist of the words of the commandments of Yahweh and of his regulations toward Israel. This is what Artaxerxes wrote. Artaxerxes, the king of kings, to Ezra the priest, the copyist of the law of the God of the heavens, peace be perfected. And now by me an order has been put through that everyone in my realm of the people of Israel and their priests and Levites that is willing to go to Jerusalem with you should go. Inasmuch as from before the king and his seven counselors, an order was sent to investigate concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the law of your God that is in your hand, and to bring the silver and the gold that the king and his counselors have voluntarily given to the God of Israel, whose residence is in Jerusalem, with all the silver and the gold that you find in all the jurisdictional district of Babylon, along with the gift of the people and the priests who are voluntarily giving to the house of their God, which is in Jerusalem. Accordingly, you will promptly buy with this money bulls, rams, lambs, and their grain offerings and their drink offerings, and you will present them upon the altar of the house of your God, which is in Jerusalem. So they might carry the money to Jerusalem and then buy these bulls and rams and lambs, or the alternative would be they'd have to buy them and then herd them and drive them all the way to Jerusalem, which seems like that would be much more difficult. It doesn't say which was the case, but they were to go up to Jerusalem and promptly buy these animals. And whatever it seems good to you and to your brothers to do with the rest of the silver and gold, according to the will of your God, you men will do. This is still the letter or the writing of Artaxerxes. And the vessels that are being given to you for the service of the house of your God, deliver in full before God at Jerusalem. And the rest of the necessities of the house of your God that it devolves upon you to give, you will give out of the king's house of treasures. Sounds very generous. If you need anything, the king is saying, you can take it from the king's house of treasures. And by me myself, Artaxerxes the king, an order has been put through to all the treasurers that are beyond the river, that everything that Ezra the priest, the copyist of the law of the God of the heavens, requests of you men, it will be done promptly, even to 100 talents of silver and 100 core measures of wheat and 100 bath measures of wine and 100 bath measures of oil and salt without limit. Let all that is by the order of the God of the heavens be done with zeal for the house of the God of the heavens, that there may occur no wrath against the king's realm and his sons. And to you men it is being made known that as respects any of the priests and the Levites, the musicians, the doorkeepers, the Nethinim, and the workers of this house of God, no tax, tribute, or toll is allowed to be imposed upon them. So this king, Artaxerxes, the king of the Medes and Persians, who was ruling at the time of Ezra, and we think he was very possibly the actual king who's called Artaxerxes Longimanus. We know there was a king called Xerxes who came after Darius, and then this is Artaxerxes who came after Xerxes. And Xerxes, we believe, is the king of, or at least many people do, including us. We believe that Xerxes is the king of the book of Esther, who is called Ahasuerus in the Bible. But this king, Artaxerxes, we see that he was very much in fear of the true God, because he said he didn't want any wrath from God against his kingdom, in verse 23. Now, verse 25, he goes on, "And you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God that is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges that they may continually judge all the people that are beyond the river," that's beyond the river Euphrates, "even all those knowing the laws of your God, and anyone that has not known them, you men will instruct. And as for everyone that does not, become a doer of the law of your God and the law of the king, let judgment be promptly executed upon him, whether for death, or for banishment, or for money fine, or for imprisonment. Blessed be Jehovah, the God of your forefathers." No, he says, "Blessed be Jehovah, the God of our forefathers, who has put such a thing into the heart of the king." And this is not, okay, that the letter ended at the word imprisonment. This is now Ezra writing this last paragraph from verse 27 on. This is Ezra's words. "Blessed be Jehovah, the God of our forefathers." Because Jehovah wasn't the God of the forefathers of Artaxerxes, but he was the God of the forefathers, the Israelites, who has put such a thing into the heart of the king to beautify the house of Yahweh, which is in Jerusalem. "And toward me," Ezra writes, "he has extended loving kindness before the king," that's Artaxerxes, "and his counselors, and as respects all the mighty princes of the king." "And I," Ezra writes, "for my part, strengthened myself according to the hand of Jehovah my God upon me, and I proceeded to collect out of Israel the head ones to go up with me." That's the end of Ezra chapter 7. So he's going up in the seventh year of Artaxerxes, the year 458 BCE in our chronology, 80 years after Zerubbabel and Jeshua had returned to Jerusalem, the first group from Babylon. So, "I strengthen myself," there he says, verse 28. That's important, something to think about. He strengthened himself to see whether we could do the same thing. Can we strengthen ourselves? It's important to some people of us to be aware that we might be able to strengthen ourselves. Zechariah chapter 11 now. And we've got five minutes. "Open your doors, O Lebanon, that a fire may devour among your cedars," Zechariah writes, chapter 11. "Howl, O juniper tree, for the cedar has fallen, because the majestic ones themselves have been despoiled. Howl, you massive trees of Bashan, for the impenetrable forest has come down. Listen, the howling of shepherds, for their majesty has been despoiled. Listen, the roaring of maned young lions, for the proud thickets along the Jordan have been despoiled." No reference to that verse. This is what Jehovah my God has said. "Shepherd the flock meant for the killing, the buyers of which proceed to kill them, although they are not held guilty. Shepherd the flock meant for the killing, the buyers of which proceed to kill them, although they are not held guilty. And those who are selling them say, may Jehovah be blessed, while I shall gain riches." Remember, Jesus said you can't serve God and mammon. You can't chase money and God. You won't be able to do both. "And their own shepherds do not show any compassion upon them." Zechariah goes on with that. "Their own shepherds do not show any compassion upon them. For I," he says in verse 6, talking about what Jehovah says, this is Jehovah's word, "I shall show compassion no more upon the inhabitants of the land," is the utterance of Jehovah. "So here I am, causing mankind to find themselves, each one in the hand of his companion and in the hand of his king." We just talked about the king, Artaxerxes, interestingly. But at the time of, even at the time of Zechariah, which is in the years of Darius, there was no king over Judah. they were only in possession of the king. Well, the king was it wasn't a Jewish king. It was the king of the Medes at the time, Darius, who was the king. But they were just under the Jewish governorship of Zerubbabel at that time when Zechariah was writing here. And in the hand of his king, and they will certainly crush to pieces the land, and I shall do no delivering out of their hand. It's talking about punishment coming upon the Israelites. It's unusual here. Zechariah is prophesying at the time of Darius, right? We've already seen that. So it can't be talking about the destruction by the Babylonians on Jerusalem, although Clark seems to think it is. When does Clark think that Zechariah prophesied? Let's go to see. Let me check that out here. When does he prophesy? Oh yeah, it's in the year 520. Yeah. So why would he wouldn't be prophesying about the destruction of Jerusalem? The year 520 is when we said it was. Right? Or 521 or something. In the second year of Darius, which actually when we take year 1 as 521, it's 520, the second year of Darius. And I proceeded to shepherd, verse 7, Zechariah 11 and 7, and I proceeded to shepherd the flock meant for the killing in your behalf, O afflicted ones of the flock. So I took for myself two staves, the one I called pleasantness and the other I called union, and I went shepherding the flock, and I finally effaced three shepherds in one lunar month, as my soul gradually became impatient with them, and also their own soul felt a loathing toward me. At length I said, I shall not keep shepherding you. The one that is dying, let her die, and the one that is being effaced, let her be effaced. As for the ones left remaining, let them devour each one the flesh of her companion. So I took my staff pleasantness and cut it to pieces in order to break my covenant that I had concluded with all the peoples, and it came to be broken in that day, and the afflicted ones of the flock who were watching me got to know in this way that it was the word of Jehovah. Then I said to them, if it is good in your eyes, give me my wages, but if not, refrain. And they proceeded to pay my wages, 30 pieces of silver. At that Jehovah said to me, throw it to the treasury, the majestic value with which I have been valued from their standpoint. Now, Judas betrayed Jesus for 30 pieces of silver, which was a fulfillment of this prophecy. Accordingly, I took the 30 pieces of silver and threw it into the treasury at the house of Jehovah, which is what Judas did with the 30 silver pieces. Then I cut in pieces my second staff, the union, in order to break the brotherhood between Judah and Israel. And we're going to have to read this tomorrow because we're out of time today, but Jehovah said, he went on to say, take yet for yourself the implements of a useless shepherd, for here I am letting a shepherd rise up in the land. To the sheep being effaced, he will give no attention. This is the useless shepherd he's talking about here. And his own arm will without fail dry up, and his own right eye will without fail grow dim. Verse 17. That's it for today's study. It's April 21st, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 19:58 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.